him. And last week we talked about the power of the gospel, and the gospel has so much power in it that it actually allows you to have joy amidst all circumstances. And I'm not, the joy is not that just like you have this fake joy or just like this put on this fake smile. It's this genuine joy. And that doesn't mean that we don't get sad ever. It doesn't mean that we don't ever like have a bad day. It just means that we can rejoice in the Lord and He can give us a peace that surpasses all understanding when we really understand the gospel. That's what Jesus does inside of us. Well, tonight, to conclude this series, what I want to do is I want to give you a gauge of the gospel. I want to give you a way that you can look at whether or not you really believe in this gospel. I know that you guys have like heard everything. You've been very attentive each week. You're listening very well. But sometimes you listen to something, but you haven't really heard it. Have you ever been there? Like, I do this often, and I wish I was a much better husband, but I do this a lot with my wife. She tells me something, and I nod my head, and I'm like, uh-huh. And then she says, did you hear what I said? And I'm like, nuh-uh. I got nothing for you. And sometimes I get myself in trouble because she'll be telling me something, and she'll say, we have dinner plans on Thursday night with so-and-so. And I'll be like, oh, that's awesome. What are we doing on Thursday night? And she's like, did you not hear what I just said? I'm like, no, I was not listening to you at all. I'm sorry. I heard you, but I didn't really hear you. The absolute worst, though, is when she sends me to go to the grocery store. Because she tells me, like, three items, and she keeps it really simple. She's like, I want the milk, bread, and fabric softener. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And then I go to the store, and I walk in, and it's like I'm in a foreign land. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing here. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to get. And, like, if I don't call her, like, I'll walk out with, like, a 24-pack of Mountain Dew and, like, you know, some hot dogs. And she's like, where's the fabric softener? I'm like, I had no idea. I thought you said hot dogs. And I just didn't listen to her, even though I heard what she said. There's a lot of us that have heard the message of the gospel. But I want to give you something that you're going to be able to tell without a shadow of a doubt if you've really heard it. If it's really impacted you, if you really believe it, you're going to be able to tell by this one thing. You talk about what you love. You tell people about what you love. That is the litmus test of whether or not you have really understood the gospel. And I just want to help you understand this a little bit. For example, I just want some of you just to yell out something that you are in love with, that you're passionate about. Like, just what are some of your loves? Like, just shout out something that you love. Just food. I heard food. I rejoice with that one. I love food. I love it. Food. Awesome. So you said something else? Scott, her husband. She loves her husband. Scott. Aww. Ice cream. All right, that's in the food category. We'll count it, though. I love ice cream. I love food. All right, what else? What else do you love? One at a time? What? Days off. You love days off. And I bet you that when you have a nice day off, at some point during that day, you love it so much, you just naturally want to tell all 5,000 of your Facebook friends. You probably just post on there, I love days off. Why? Because you love days off. You tell people what you love. What else is something that you love? Bacon. Love bacon. Love bacon. There's a bacon shortage going on, I heard. I read something about that. So you'll probably be tweeting and posting a lot about why you're sad that you don't have enough bacon, because you love bacon. All right, what else? Say something else. Who? One more time? Guinea pigs. Got to get passionate about the guinea pigs. Love the guinea pigs. And I bet if you had Facebook, you would at some point just post on there, I love my guinea pig. Like, it would just naturally come out. All right, someone else has something over here? Family. Family. That's an awesome thing to love. And I bet if you love your family, great things come out. If you were just to, like, tell your Facebook friends, if you're hanging out with someone, you just naturally start telling them about your family. And I'm glad that you love your family, because sometimes when I look on Facebook, I'm like, nobody today loves their family. Everyone's bashing on their families. But if I looked at your Facebook page, I bet it would say some good things about your family. All right, one more. One more thing that you love. America. America. I love America. Okay. That's great. I bet you're passionate about America. I bet that when it's the 4th of July, you say great things about America. And you just love it. You naturally want to tell people about America. If you go to other countries and you sit in their restaurants and they're feeding you fish and chips, I'm sure you say, this is gag nasty. You guys need to try a Big Mac. That's American. I'm sure that's what you're thinking. We naturally tell people about the things that we love. In fact, let me just test this out, because I know that I know some of you really, really well. But there's others of you that I've never even had a conversation with. But I bet you, if you've been coming to Next Level long enough, you're going to know some things that I love. For example, just shout it out, what is my favorite basketball team? Did you hear how loud that was? The Lakers. The Lakers. Now, here's the thing. I love the Lakers. I'm passionate about the Lakers. In fact, when people ask me like what my favorite football team is, because we're in football season right now, I tell them the Lakers. And they look at me weird, and I'm like, I don't have a favorite football team. I'm a Lakers fan. I am passionate about the Lakers. Since I was in the third grade, they have been my favorite basketball team. In fact, my SportsCenter watching goes way down when it's not basketball season. I love the Lakers. Now, God is doing something kind of interesting in my life with being a Lakers fan. I don't really know why he's done this, but he has surrounded me with Celtics fans. And no, that's not the appropriate time to cheer. In fact, it's really interesting to me that almost all of my best friends that like basketball love the Boston Satans. I mean Celtics. They love the Celtics. In fact, some of our friends offered to watch my twins, and a few months ago they watched them so Monica and I could spend some time together. And while we were hanging out, they sent me a picture that was just ungodly. They desecrated my son by doing this. Check this out. That is an abomination. I really think that he's pooping himself in that picture because he can't stand wearing Celtic green. Now, people hit me with this stuff. Why? Because I am naturally a Lakers fan and my love for them, it comes out. In fact, there's a friend that comes here a lot on Sundays, and the very first time I met her, she was walking past me, and she was wearing a San Antonio Spurs shirt. And at the time, the Lakers, I think, were playing the Spurs in the playoffs, or they were about to play them. I'd never met this woman. I'd never seen this woman. But she walked past me, and just out of my mouth, I said, "Boo!" I booed someone that I didn't know. And, like, I couldn't take the words back. It just naturally came out. She was wearing Spurs stuff in my presence, and I was like, "Boo!" And, like, luckily, she had a great sense of humor, and she came up, and she pretended, like, to hit me. And, like, we ended up having this friendship, and we talk about basketball. Every time I see her, we talk about basketball because of that. It just naturally came out. You tell people what you love. Naturally comes out. Let me throw out something else, see if you guys know this. What is my favorite food? Like, what's my restaurant of choice? Chipotle. It was like you guys were a choir. It was just like in unison. So many people know my favorite food is Chipotle. I love Chipotle. Absolutely love it. In fact, I am an evangelist for Chipotle. I've never taken a class on it. No one's ever twisted my arm. I don't get a discount. I just can't help talking about Chipotle. I absolutely love it. In fact, I ate at Chipotle one time 4 days in a row for lunch. 4 days, and I wasn't sick of it. I would have eaten a fifth day if it didn't cost me money. Like, I love Chipotle. Absolutely love it. And I can't help but tell people about my love for Chipotle. Why? Because you talk about the things that you love. And so if that's true with things like our family and movies and guinea pigs and America and Chipotle, then how come it's not true with God? How come someone has to twist our arm to tell them about Jesus? And how come we're afraid and we wonder, like, oh, what if they judge me? Or like, oh, what if they say something bad? Like, why doesn't it just naturally come out? Because if you love something, you naturally talk about it. One of the most famous preachers of all time is dead, but his name is Charles Spurgeon. And Spurgeon was actually known as the Prince of Preachers. And he has incredible material out there. And Spurgeon one time was asked if he really believes if people that have not heard the gospel will be separated from God. And he said, yes. And then he said, but I have a better question for you. And look at what Spurgeon says. He says, how could those of us who have known Jesus and failed to take him to those who have not heard possibly be saved? Let me read that again. How could those of us who have known Jesus and failed to take him to those who have not heard possibly be saved? That is such a convicting quote. Because if we're saved, that is, if we're a Christian, it naturally should come out that we should tell people that don't know about Jesus about Jesus. But I want to make sure that you get something here. I'm not just trying to convict you tonight. Because I've sat in messages where I felt really convicted because I didn't tell everybody about Jesus. And I left and I was like, okay, I'm just going to tell someone about Jesus. And I would feel this conviction and it would last for a couple days, maybe a week. But then it would go away and then I would stop telling people about Jesus. And so I don't want to just convict you. I don't want to make you feel bad and so you just are forced to do something. I want us to have a natural response. In the same way that we respond to our sports teams and our family and our favorite foods, I want us to naturally just not be able to hold in our love for Jesus. And so tonight, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to simply give us the gospel again. I just want to tell us the gospel, and it's going to be from Paul. Once again, Paul's one of the major authors of the New Testament, and in his letter to the Philippians, there is a section that he writes about the gospel. And my hope is that we would hear it, but we would really hear it. That we wouldn't just listen and like nod our heads and say, oh, that's good. But like it would do something in our hearts, that it would stir something in here that would cause us to want to tell everybody about the gospel. So let's look at what Paul has to say in Philippians chapter 2. Paul says, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit. And let me just stop there just for a second. This is what Paul's doing. Paul is talking to a church that he started in Philippi. And he's saying, if you have any benefits from being a Christian, if you've ever experienced any of the great things that come along with being a Christian, and he's about to make a point, but before he makes a point, he says, if you have any fellowship with the Spirit. And I've read this verse lots of times. I took a class in seminary that was all about Philippians, and I'd never read that phrase. Like, it was like I'd heard it, but it never like sunk in. And when I read it this week, it was like, that's amazing. If you've ever had fellowship with the Spirit, you know that most religions don't talk to you about friendship with God? Like, most of the time, it's like, okay, God's up there, here's this huge distance, and I've got to work really hard just to please him so he doesn't nuke me. But Christianity says something totally different. Christianity says not only did God come down and die for you, but because of that, you can have fellowship with his Spirit. Like when I hear about fellowship, I just think about like hanging out, just spending time with, enjoying the presence of God. We get that. I love that. That goes way past just Sundays singing a few songs and listening to a message. Like we get the honor and privilege of fellowshipping with God. That's amazing. And then Paul goes on to say, look at it with me. He says, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Now, before Paul goes into the gospel, he makes this point, and we can tell by his point that there's a little bit of disunity going on in the church in Philippi. He hints at it here, but then later on in his letter, he actually calls out two women that aren't like getting along. Now, how would you like to be those two women that are written in the Bible forever because you were like fighting with one another? But if you ever read Philippians, like they're in there. He calls them out by name. And this is why Paul is making this point before he gets the gospel. Before he tells us the message, he says, we have to be unified. If you've ever benefited from God's love, you and I have to get along. And you, the person next to you, you have to get along. You have to be unified. Why? Why is that such a big deal? Because if we can't get along, why is anyone going to want our message? Why is anyone going to want the gospel if we hate one another? If you and I cannot get along, if we don't like being with one another, why is anyone want to ever come visit us? And Paul makes this point. We've got to be unified. One of the things that I absolutely love about Next Level Church, and I know we're only 5 months old, but one of the things that I love about us is there is a spirit of unity here. And that doesn't mean that we always get along. That doesn't mean that there's never drama. There's been drama in our church. I've had to make hospital visits, and there's been people's lives who are like falling apart. And like it's not like we're this perfect thing going on here. But as far as together, like, we're unified. And I love that. The truth is you're not always going to agree with everything that I say. You're not. And I don't claim to have all the answers or to be the perfect pastor that is never going to, like, you know, misinterpret something. I promise you I'm going to do my best to study my tail off and to give you what I believe is the author's intent in the Bible. I'm going to work really hard at that. But sometimes I miss it. In fact, a few months ago in the hallway, I was talking to a friend, and he said, you know, your message that you gave 4 weeks ago, I've really been wrestling with it. And I thought he was going to say wrestling with it because like he was convicted about something, but he said, the application that you gave, I've been reading that verse over and over again, and I don't see that the author made the application that you made. And I was like, well, I don't know. I haven't read it in a little while. Like, what do you mean? He said, well, I've read this thing over and over again. I looked at what other scholars have said about it. I've dug into some commentaries. Nobody says that the point of that passage is the application that you gave us as a church. So I had to go back and look at it. Now, I didn't intentionally try to misinterpret something, but I read something, and I was going with it, and I was really excited about it. And the application that I gave, it was motivating. There was nothing wrong with the application, but it was not the point of the text. And I love that someone could come tell me. And he didn't say, let me tell you, Brother Rob, you're an idiot. He didn't tell me that. He said it in grace, and I loved it. I loved receiving it. If you were here last month, we did a series called Hot Topic. And at the end of the series, we did a Q&A where you guys could just ask questions, and they would be texted up onto the screen. And somebody asked a question about what my opinion was about women pastors. And so I went to the text and I said my best understanding of women pastors. I said what I was taught in seminary. I said my understanding of the verse. A friend of mine sends me an email on Monday and he's like, what about Romans 16? And I was like, what does that mean? Like, I don't know. What are you talking about? And then he says some woman's name. And I was like, dude, I've never heard of this woman. Like, we need to talk about this. And so I called him. And he was like, well, what about? And he said the lady's name. And I said, I've never read that before. And so I went back and I read it. And there is a woman that Paul mentions in Romans, I think it's 16, that many people believe was a woman pastor. And I had to wrestle with that. That's very different than anything I was ever taught. And I had to read a bunch of scholars. And some people believe that she wasn't a pastor. And some people hold on to that she was not a pastor. But there are other groups that are well-meaning Christians that believe she was a woman pastor. And so how do we wrestle with that, knowing what Paul says in other passages about women pastors? I had to wrestle with that. But I love that somebody in love could say, you know what, I was taught something different. I've been reading the Bible myself. Like, what about this? I love that we could have that dialogue. I love it. Because we, even though we may not agree with everything, even though you may have a different theology than me, we can be unified. Why? What is our message? Our message, our mission at Next Level Church is to love Jesus, love people, and make a difference. And we can be unified about that. We don't have to agree about everything. In fact, you may disagree with me, and I may disagree with you. I may be looking through Facebook and see that you posted something and say, oh, really? Why would you do that? But I don't have to yell at you. I don't have to cuss you out. I don't have to make you feel like an idiot. Like, we can be unified even if we disagree about things. I love that. And it's so important that we get that. And I need you to get that. Because we can never, no one's ever going to accept the gospel if you and I don't love one another. So after Paul makes that point, he goes on. And let's look at what he says. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. I don't know about you, but I am selfish to the core. If it were not for what Jesus did for me, and if it were not for his continual prodding for me to put other people first, and if it weren't for verses like this, I would continually be all about myself. I would be so selfish that I would end up destroying myself. That's what selfishness is. Like, when you can't stop doing something, when you're addicted to something and you're destroying yourself, like, by doing it, it's selfishness. You can't stop. You're so addicted to yourself. And I'm selfish and you're selfish. And if it weren't for Jesus, like, I would destroy myself. I hate being selfish. Let me just give you an example. Have you ever walked into a room and seen someone crying and you know them? It's not like a stranger. Like, you're friends with them. You know what the first thought is in my mind? Oh, I hope they're not mad at me. Like, my first thought is not, oh, their heart's breaking. Like, you know, they're probably struggling with something. Like, it's like, uh-oh, I might have done something bad. So I go and I sit down. I'll put my arm around them and I'll say, hey, how's it going? And they'll start crying. And then I'll say, are you mad at me? And they say, no, my parents are divorcing. And I'm like, okay. Oh, I mean, I'm so sorry. But you're not mad at me. And we are selfish creatures. And Paul not only tells us to be unified, he says that we've got to do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than ourselves. Now, what is the ultimate test of considering someone better than yourself? It's when you tell them the good news of the gospel. How selfish is it for Christians to hold on to the message of the gospel and not tell someone else about it? It would be like me discovering the cure for cancer and saying, you know what, this is a good cure. I'm going to hold on to it. I'm not going to tell anyone. I got it. If I ever get cancer, I'm good to go. Like that, you would look at me and say, you are an evil person. But yet we have the good news of Jesus, and we're not willing to tell other people about it. In humility, we should consider other people better than ourselves and be willing to tell others about the gospel. From there, Paul goes on to give us the ultimate example of the person that actually did this, that put others before himself. And look at what Paul says. He says, your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped. So Paul says that your attitude should be the same as Jesus. And then he says he did not think equality with God something to be grasped. Now we need to talk about that word grasp, because when I hear that, it means you didn't understand it. Like, I can't grasp that thought. Like math, I cannot grasp math. I struggle with math. In fact, I don't think I've used any math that I learned past the third grade. Like, I just kind of checked it all out. Like, I can never do fractions. I can't do long division. I'm good with addition. I'm good with subtraction. Everything else, I've just like thrown out the window. I can't grasp it. Some of you are wired to grasp math, but I cannot grasp it. And I don't think that Paul is saying that Jesus could not grasp, that is, understand what it means to be God, because that goes against what the Bible teaches. Jesus was God. So it's not saying that he couldn't grasp it, he couldn't understand it. It's saying that he didn't grasp it with his hands. He didn't clutch it. He didn't hold on to it. My son Hayden, since he was a baby, we gave him this little stuffed dog that is blue. And we were really creative, and we named him Blue. And Hayden can't go to sleep without Blue. Like, it's always, like, right under his arm, and, like, he loves Blue. But he's done something really weird. Even before he got teeth, like, he loves to chew on Blue's face. And, like, he puts the whole head, like, in his mouth. And Blue smells gag nasty, because it's always in Hayden's mouth. It's disgusting. We have to wash him multiple times a week, because he just stinks. And sometimes, when I go in to wake Hayden up, he's got Blue in his mouth, and I'll grab Blue's legs and I'll tug on it, and it's like a little puppy dog, and Hayden will go like this, and like I kind of play with him, and he is grasped, he's clutched down on Blue, and he's not giving it up. And what Paul is saying here is that Jesus is God, and he could have grasped it, he could have clutched onto it and said, you know what, I don't want to become a human, I don't want to go down there. No one forced him to come to earth and to die. He could have said, I'm just going to hold tightly to this thing. But he didn't. He let go of it. Now look what Paul says next. Paul says, but Jesus made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father. That is the gospel. That's the gospel. That is the good news. That is amazing that Jesus, who was in heaven, and you got to picture this. It wasn't like all of a sudden God had the idea for Jesus and he was like, boop, you're born in a stable. Jesus has always been around. And Jesus was up in heaven, and when God said, it's time, Jesus went. And if I was Jesus, I would have been like, oh, okay, hold on a second, God, come on. Can we at least not put me down in the 1980s, because that's the greatest decade ever, and they have AC and Nintendo. Can you put me down in that decade? Like, I don't know about the stinky, like, way back 2,000 years ago. But Jesus didn't say that. He said, okay, it's time, I'm going to go. And it says that he became a servant. A servant. Sometimes, growing up in the church, I had this kind of just opinion of God, that God had to do things for me because he loved me. I don't know if you've ever thought that, but it's like, Jesus died for my sins. Yeah, I know that, because he's God. He has to do that. It's kind of like the way that I viewed my parents, especially in like middle school and high school. My parents would tell me something like a compliment, and I always appreciated it. I'm glad they did. I would rather them say something nice than say, you disgust me. Like, I'm really glad that they said nice things to me. But sometimes my parents would say something, and they'd say, you know, oh, Rob, you look really nice today. And I would say, thank you. But in the back of my mind, I would be thinking, you know what? I could have fallen from the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down, and my parents would still say, Rob, you look really nice today. They have to. They're my parents. Like, they just have this view for me that is different. They're proud of me. They're always proud of me. And so it kind of just, even though their words were powerful, it just kind of always took away from me, because it was like, oh, they're my parents. They have to love me. But then I had kids, and I realized the sacrifice that it is to have a kid. And then I realized this love that you really do have for your kids, and it kind of put things in perspective with my parents. This verse says that Jesus became a servant. At one point, he was in heaven, and in heaven, there is no pain. And there are no tears. There's no cancer. There's no miscarriages. There's no broken hearts and broken promises. And Jesus looked down, and he came into our mess. And you've got to stop viewing this as, oh, yeah, he had to do that. He's God. Think about it this way. When I was living in Texas, I lived in Texas for 2 years to go to seminary. And in Texas, everything is bigger. That's like their slogan, and it is truth. Everything really is bigger, except for the trees and the beaches. They have no trees because everything is concrete, and they have no beaches. But everything else is like way bigger. It's a massive state. Everything is huge. Everything is bigger, including their cockroaches. They have cockroaches that are the sizes of brontosauruses. I mean, they're like, you could put a saddle on a Texas cockroach and ride it if you wanted to. And Monica and I, my wife, we're really clean people. We've never had cockroaches in any of the other places that we live. But in our little seminary housing that was attached to a bunch of other seminary students' housing, there were cockroaches, huge cockroaches. And we had the whole place bombed. Like, we asked the bug killer to come in and bomb our house multiple times. And we set up traps. And no matter what we did, though, we couldn't get rid of cockroaches. We got to the point, though, that we wouldn't see cockroaches on a daily basis. They would only come out when we hadn't been in the house for a while. So, like, in the summertime, when we'd be gone for a couple months, and then we would come, like, home, we'd open the door, and we'd flip on the light. It was like a movie, and cockroaches were like, they'd scatter. It was disgusting. We hated those creatures. I would take out my frustration on cockroaches. If I saw one, I would step on it and feel good about myself, like, just squish it. Hated these nasty creatures. There's nothing good about a cockroach. Now, just imagine, though, one day I was sitting there, and I looked down, and I said, you know what? My heart actually breaks for these cockroaches. They're disgusting, but they don't know any better. And I want to have a relationship with these cockroaches, but they can't relate to me because I'm this human and they're cockroaches. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send my son to become a cockroach. And I magically turn my son into a cockroach, and he goes and hangs out with them. And there's a lot of cockroaches that really love this. They're like, oh my goodness, like, you're Rob's son, like, we can relate to you, and like, this is great. And there were a lot of people that loved hanging out with my son, the cockroach, but there were some people that didn't like it. So some of these cockroaches, they actually take my son and they put him in a roach motel and they kill him. Now, that story is not at all meant to paint me as God. Please get that out of your mind. The point of that story is those nasty, disgusting cockroaches have no reason for me to send my son to die for them. And that is the picture of Jesus becoming a slave for us. He didn't die because you're a good person or because you've done something great. You are a nasty cockroach, but yet God loves you, and he loves you so much that he sent his son to become one of you, to feel your pain. And he died on a cross in your place. That is the gospel. And that should change everything. And that message should stir something inside of us that says, okay, this is our example. Our example is Jesus didn't stay up in cushy heaven. He left. He went to earth to tell people the message, the gospel. We should follow his example and go out and tell other people about the gospel. But I know what some of you guys are thinking. Some of you are thinking, yeah, but it's not that easy. Because what if I tell someone about Jesus, and they bring up some point about the Bible that I don't understand, because I don't understand the Bible very well? Well, I told you that I absolutely love Chipotle, and one of the things that I love about Chipotle is that it is a very simple restaurant. Sometimes I get anxiety when I go into a restaurant and their menu is just, like, massive. Like, Cheesecake Factory, ever been to Cheesecake Factory? If I go there to eat, like, it just causes anxiety. It's just, like, page after page of food. Like, I don't know, I just keep it simple. When you go to Chipotle, you only have a few options. If you've never been, you should go there tonight because we're all going to be thinking about Chipotle after I talked about it. But Chipotle has a very simple menu. When you walk in, you only have four options. You got a burrito, you got tacos, you got a burrito bowl, which is just a burrito without the tortilla, and then you got a salad. And I don't even understand the salad because a salad is just the burrito bowl but with lettuce in it. But you can get lettuce on the burrito, so I say they only have three options. But it's still on there, so three or four options depending on who you ask. Now you got those three or four options, and then you only have a few toppings that you can put on it. Like, it's not like there's thousands. You have a few choices. You can put a couple types of beans on there if you want them, or if you don't want beans, you don't have to put them on there. You can put the peppers and onions on there, but you don't have to. And then you get to the salsas. They only have three salsas. It's not like a salsa bar that has like 84,000 salsas. It's three. And when you want cheese, it's Chipotle cheese or nothing. You don't like pick the cheeses that you want. It's very simple. You can put lettuce on it, or you don't put lettuce on it. You only got four choices for meat, like it's only four. You can get guacamole. It's $1.25 extra. It's worth it, but it is $1.25 extra. Now, Chipotle, I love it because it really is that simple. Like, there's just a few options. Well, one day when I was eating at Chipotle, I saw on one of their cups that they said they had over 60,000 varieties. 60,000 varieties. That's mind-blowing. How in the world can a simple restaurant with just a few options have 60,000 varieties? Now, what if somebody came to me and said, Rob, I need you to explain the 60,000 varieties at Chipotle. I'd be like, I don't know. I can't grasp the math. I don't get it. I don't know how four choices turns into 60,000. I have no idea. I don't understand that. But I've tasted Chipotle, and I love it. And it's the exact same thing with God. When you have tasted God, you just naturally love Him. And you can't help but tell people about it. And if someone comes with you and says, hey, explain the book of Revelation, you can say, I don't have a fat clue about Revelation, but I've tasted Jesus and He's good. We get so afraid. We get so afraid. What if somebody asks me something that I don't know? Just say, I don't know. But I've tasted Jesus. He has changed my life. But some of you think, oh, wait. Well, what if someone wants to argue with me? What if someone comes and says, I don't like Chipotle. I like Moe's. Well, I'd tell them they're a dirty, rotten sinner and they're going to burn in hell. That's what I would tell them. No, I'm joking. Don't tell them that. I hate Moe's just because I love Chipotle. You can't love Moe's and Chipotle. But what if someone wants to argue with me and tell me why Moe's is so great because they have queso? I would tell them, man, you know what? I'm glad that you like Moe's. There's nothing I can do to convince you to like Chipotle. I'm not going to argue about it because I can't argue into you loving something. If you ever want to have just a conversation and want to hear my story and hear why I love Chipotle so much, I'll sit down and talk with you. But if you just want to argue with me, there's no way you're going to convince me to love that nasty food that tastes like it's been dropped on the floor and then stuffed in a burrito. There's no way you can convince me of that. And I can't convince you of the yummy goodness of Chipotle. But what I can tell you is that I love Chipotle and it's changed my taste buds' life. Exact same thing with God. If someone wants to argue with you about God, don't argue with them. You can't change their opinion. Just say, hey, if you want to come back one day and have a conversation and want to hear why Jesus has changed my life or how Jesus has changed my life, I'll tell you about it, but I'm not going to argue with you. Because you can't convince me to love what you love and I can't convince you to love what I love. The truth is that if you love something, you'll tell people about it. And so tonight, I just wanted to present to you the gospel one last time. I wanted you just to hear it, and I hope that you really heard it. I hope that it does something in your heart. This is Jesus became a man. He became a servant. He gave up all the greatness of heaven to become one of us, and then He died in our place. And I hope that message stirs in you something that you just can't help but talk about Jesus. And you don't even have to go out and look for somebody to tell about Jesus. Just in natural conversation. You're just like, man, God's changed my life. And you just can't help but talk about Jesus. So tonight, the application is, I want to give us a prayer to pray. And I would encourage some of you to write this down and pray it often. Maybe even pray it a couple times this week. But the prayer is simply, as you've been to me, so I'll be to others. God, as you've been to me, so I'll be to others. What is Paul's ultimate point in this? His ultimate point is that we are to follow Jesus' example and in humility consider other people better than ourselves. And so that is the call of Christianity, that we are to consider other people better than ourselves. Why? Because our God did that for us. So a simple prayer is, as you've been to me, so I will be to others. And I want to give you a second just to pray that to God. And specifically after you pray that, I want you to ask God for a name of somebody that you can share the gospel with. Maybe it's a family member, maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a neighbor. Maybe you don't have anyone. Maybe you can just say, hey, God, can you put someone in my life that I can tell them about the gospel? So I want to give you guys a few seconds to talk with God, and then we'll be dismissed. God, we ask that you would stir in our hearts just this deep love for you. As you've been to us, God, you loved us even when we were unlovable. God, help us to be that same way to others. God, I ask that you would just be stirring in us people that we could continually pray for. And God, I ask that you would just give us this desire to tell everyone about our love for you. God, I ask that this week you would put in our place opportunities to share the gospel with people. And God, I ask that you'd help us to see great fruit from that, that we would see people respond. God, we love you. We thank you for saving us. Thank you for the sacrifice of your Son. Help us to make a difference in your name. Amen. Well, thank you guys so much for being here tonight. If this is your first time with us, we'd love to know that you are here, and we'd also like to help you get connected. If you're looking to get connected, fill out that connection card, give us a little bit of information, and then hand that to the ushers on your way out. And if you're here tonight and you'd like to give a gift or an offering, you can do so by placing in the envelope, which is in your seat, and handing that to the ushers on your way out. Thank you guys so much for being here. We'll see you next week.